Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I'm an SAP Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just one who joins me to talk guest every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either dial on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talkshoe website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for call ID 17702. And you will find it. Remember to bring your Chrome or Chromium-based browser with you, because they don't like anything else. And if you want to watch us on Twitch, go to twitch.tv/SFUOnCall. That will be started right when the stream starts. So definitely tune in. I'm watching the chat room there, just keeping an eye on things. And I'd be happy to respond to any questions that you have or anything, any comments that you want to make about the podcast. Obviously, there is a slight delay because it's video. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Twitter, my account there is sfuoncall. And also a personal account, which is I use for most of my stuff, which is Paul Franz. That's PAULFRANZ. And I talk about being Catholic and tech. And of course, my favorite team, the Orioles. So you might be hearing me talk about those things. Some quick news from A to B this week. Of course, Steve Cole is busy working on FedCom, purely by email cards. He's in the hospital, and he will be quarantined there until his surgery. For the most part, they're allowing him to go to the office as long as he stays in the office and avoids other human contact, because they won't have him actually get infected with the COVID virus. COVID-19, to be exact. So keep in your prayers for when the actual surgery begins. Also, at ADB, they're working on a collection of ships for Shapeways that will represent the different tournament cruisers that are part of that great collection of ships for playing tournaments, which I think is an excellent, excellent idea. And just a reminder, for those of you who don't know this already, but actually ADB does have a Twitter account. It might be a shock to you, but they do. It's ADB_Amarillo. That's ADB_Amarillo. It's ADBINC_AMARILLO. Just to let you know so you can follow them. They're the most active, obviously, is Facebook. So you can find their Facebook page just by looking for Emerald Design Bureau. You should easily find them there. Moving on to the Sapphire Star Tournament. Round 3 is completed with Peter Bikia over Ben. So, and no, to me, there's no real shocker, just because Peter is that good of a player. And of course, so the final is going to be, this is going to be a real good matchup, people. It's going to be Peter Bikia in the Gorn versus Jack Taylor in the Wind Black Shark. Now, the Wind Black Shark that he's flying, he selected 2 drone racks for the option racks. That gives him 4 drones. That's considered what's called the Zinti version of the Black Shark, i.e. has 4 drone racks. Not as many phasers that you could possibly have, because normally the Klingon version, quote-unquote, is in those option mounts you put the phaser once, and that gives you a better overall, direct fire punch, not as much seeking weapons, but this one he went for the drones. So it should be definitely an interesting one, because Peter has before he played the Gorn, which has been his kind of exclusive ship for a while, he used to fly the Zinni. And Lord knows, I still remember his old Zinni counters that he had, this special set of Zinni counters that he always played, and they were so worn when he used to play them. I remember judging him. Now, this is many, many years ago now. Jeez. When we still went to Origins, and well, with ADB still went to Origins, and they still had the tournament running. Moving on to the library report. I just to let you know, yes, as I mentioned last week, there are only a few ships that actually need to be done when it comes to the Alpha, if you exclude the PFs. The PFs are the largest portion when it comes to the Alpha Quadrant. All the rest are Omega. Actually, there's a few ships which I need to look into. I think we have the background images for, which so we could complete those ships themselves. But I think that, you know, other than the PFs, because, and I think some of the PFs we could use some of the background images for the larger ships, because their SSD look similar to those. So it'd be interesting to see if we can get the PFs done too. But that still stays a complete conversion at 2,522, yet to be converted 799, and I'm willing to bet that most of those are, I know most of those are Omegas. What I might do for next week is give you a breakdown of how many yet to be converted when it comes to PFs and yet to be converted are Omegas. I will give you a breakdown on that number. But the other number, which I am now showing because we're actually making some progress in, is the FedCom library. We're actually adding more ships. I actually have an additional volunteer. There's four ships he wants to really get into the library. I've got one of them. The other three, I need to wait for Steve Cole to send me them. And actually, I'm not even sure if they're available. I have to check to see what they are. And I definitely, as soon as I get those three, I will send them off to this person because he really wants them in. Definitely the one set I will send to him, not tonight, but tomorrow. So he'll have it. But getting back to that, current our squadron size ships are up to 348 and fleet size is up to 246. So with that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one, the only Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight we have Barry. Hey, Barry.
Hey, how's you doing?
Doing good. And we have Gary. How you doing, Gary?
Not so bad. I hope everyone's doing well. Or as well as can be expected.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Staying safe up there?
Trying to.
Cool.
That's never fun.
It's a choice of staying safe or possibly being dead. I prefer the latter than the former. The former than the latter, so, you know. But that's just me.
Yeah. I understand that.
Maybe it's like playing safe, you know. But anyhow, if you tuned in last week, Barry wanted to revisit the Mezeron, which was quite an interesting empire, and actually when it comes to the tournament cruisers, one of those ones that we thought we had pretty much down pat and pretty well balanced. So Barry, what's the reason for the revisit anyway?
We haven't talked about it in a while. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that it's, I mean, there's pluses and minuses. Now, having said that, I probably haven't played Starfleet Battles in too long. And that's one of the ships that I actually wasn't perfectly happy with. I was happy with it until people started saying, well, no, you can't do it this way. And it's like, oh, crap, I had it balanced perfectly, and now it's not.
This is weird.
Yeah. Well, and I'm just talking about balance for the tournament cruiser.
Right. Oh, understood. Overall, you know, we rarely talk about balance of the umpires themselves, though I think we've all agreed that some of the weapons aren't quite balanced, even between the Omega umpires themselves. You know, they needed to be ironed out, and we'll let it go at that, because we have discussed that before.
Yeah.
And I don't want to.
We've been down that road many a time before. But when I'm looking at tournament play, it's like, you know, I know.
Understood.
I'm not saying anything I'm saying here is for regular gameplay, just for tournament play.
Though, in some cases, it can be.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm not saying that you're going to have dual situations all the time, but some of those situations, even in small squadrons, you know, some at the very least, the introduction to the weapons and how the weapons, what empires are better versus other ones when it comes to how the weapons interact, you know, can be helpful for all, not just for tournament play. Now, I agree that people playing, it's rare when it comes to Omega. You know, Omega is not exactly the favorite empires, you know, in all SFB. But, you know, in that case, I think that overall, you know, I think they are short shrift by some, you know.
Right, right. And I had the impression that of all the Omega ships, the tournament cruisers had the most love in terms of play.
Oh, yeah, yeah, well, definitely. I know you, Peter Bakia. I think I'm not sure if I played a couple.
You have. I played a couple of them against you. I know. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's true. That's true. We've done our own personal play tests, you know, live action play tests at Gamers of Winter and Gamers of Summer. And
Council of Five Nations, too.
Yep. Yep. Wow. Yeah. We went one time. I haven't gone since.
Yeah, I haven't been back since either. Of course, it makes it a lot harder now that I'm in Kentucky.
That is true.
But I may get a chance this year. I don't know. Gary, have you? And it's been what? 5-6 years since we last discussed the Mazaron. Were you involved in that discussion or can't remember? Or
I don't think so.
Well, what I was actually thinking was that in Captain's Log 51, there is a Mazaron command cruiser. Actually, because in recent issues of Captain's Log, some of the space has been taken up by playtest material for new empires like those Osman Marauders. But other space has been taken up for additional ships for pre-existing empires. So, for example, in CL 51, both the Mazarons and Prober get a command cruiser. And then in Captain's Log 52, the Trobriand, because the Trobriand command cruiser that's in print in Module Omega 2 is really more of a battle cruiser. So they have an early command cruiser in CL 52, which is basically a command variant of the heavy cruiser. And then the Kolagar, they have a command cruiser in that same issue as well. And also for the first time for those two empires, the question of warp refits is addressed in CL-52 as well. So, but anyway, basically what I was trying to get to is that for the Mazarons, if there were to be any kind of like formal look by ADB, I'm not too sure. I mean, again, of course, you know, none of us can speak for them, but I wouldn't be surprised if they might say, well, why are they, like, the starter point might be with some of the ships that are historically in that range and then work from there, rather than going too far in terms of working up side ships, which doesn't sound great. But, I mean, it's not entirely bad either, because I don't know if, Paul, do you have your copy of Captain Slug 51 there with you?
Yep. And actually right now up on the screen, I know you guys can't see it at the moment, is the Mazaron command cruiser from 51. Mm-hmm. I sent a PDF to Barry.
Oh, so, let me take a look to see.
Yeah,
basically the...
Yeah, I was just going to say, right before the we started, I sent an email of the PDF.
Oh, okay, just pulled it up. Well, let's see. It's very similar to the one I had created.
Mm-hmm.
Although, let's see, how much warp does it have? 2, 4, 6. 2, 4, 6. So it's got 12, 13. So 26, 27, 28 warp. Yeah, because I know that most of the Omega ships are considered equivalent, to, at least in Omega 1 and Omega 2 and probably 3 and 4, are considered middle year ships.
Well, so is this ship in a sense, because in the OR section that's in Captain Log 51, it's explained that when the ship initially entered service as the early command cruiser, it didn't have it basically still had the same 26 warp as the heavy cruiser. So the main difference would have been in the flag bridge. Mazaron ships usually only had just one flag bridge, even the Dreadnought, relative to other empires adding two or whatever. And it upgraded the phasers 7 and 8 to wide angle phaser 1s instead of wide angle phaser 3s. And then in Y-165, the warp pack in the center warp was added. So if you look at some of the ships in Module Omega 2, like the Mazaron Frignaut or the Volpo Blockade Runner, they both have the same warp pack. And actually, if you look on Shapeways, there's actually representation of those warp packs for those designs as well. So the concept here is that basically the Mazarons, when they were looking at some of the other, you know, command ships that were being fielded around the same time, they went with the warp pack as a way to give it extra energy. So it's kind of like how, if you look at a Federation heavy command cruiser relative to the standard command cruiser, it's got the extra warp in the engine, in the saucer, I should say.
Yeah.
So it's a similar concept here. So yes. Now this, yeah, so yeah.
So it's like a pod that gets attached to the command, to the ship, right?
Yeah. Paul, can you, do you have a copy of the latest GIF file for the latest tournament cruiser that I created for the Mazaron?
Oh, that's a good question. What I probably should do is just do this. Let me just bring up the client.
Yeah. And can you send that to Gary?
See if,
if not, I can email it to you.
Why don't you email it to Gary? That'll probably be a heck of a lot easier.
All right. And Gary, what's your email?
Well, I wouldn't want to give it out on the podcast.
I'll send it to Paul.
I'm not on my computer right now anyway, so...
Oh.
So, yeah, basically, I was just looking at the... I have my copy of CL-51 in hand here, so I was just going by that. But
okay. Well, let me tell you the major differences between my ship and the CC is mine has no center warp, but it's got 30 regular warp. I brought it up to tournament standards. Let's see. In terms of APR, I've got 2 extra APR from the command cruiser. So I've got 2 more warp and 2 more APR, giving it 40 power. The phaser ones I have are on different parts of the ship, but basically they are identical firing arcs except for the two PW1s next to the tachyon guns in the back. Instead of being FA, there's two of them are FAL and two of them are FAR. And the PW3s in the back, instead of being RA, one is RAL and one is RAR. I upgraded the tachyon missiles to B launchers. And then I created a couple of pre-built tachyon missiles. Said you basically can choose for tournament purposes. I said you can pick from one of these two types, and that's it. So you have two TMB module racks. You have 10 total missiles. You can pick all of type one, all of type two, or any mixture of those types you want. And obviously, you have to choose what they are. And the type ones are. I put a 28-speed propulsion module in them, and the Type 1s have 12, armor of 12, explosion of 16, anti-tractor of 1, so effective speed of 24. The Type 2 has an armor of 16, an explosion of 8, anti-tractor of 1, and also an effective speed of 24. So they're not two out there, this, you know, but they are, yeah. Remember that the ship can only fire one tachyon missile per turn. So,
well, how often is a tournament game going to go more than six turns?
Not often.
Depends. It depends on what empires you're talking about, though.
And I know where you're going with A's instead of B's.
Yeah, but another... if you remember with the FRA discussion, I was even suggesting dial the B's on that ship back to A's and just have A's be the standard for TM Rex for any empire that possesses tachyon missiles. In that situation, I mean, I can understand the idea of offering pre-cooked missiles because I tried to do that with the Federation Commander playtest rules where you've got the standard missiles that come with the ship are just the standard ones that you get, more or less in SFB, whereas you have like three options depending on which time period you're fighting in of purchasing more powerful missiles or whatever. But a couple of things, though, is that when it comes to the shielding that's on the Captain's Log 51 ship, the front three shields are boosted up, but the shield 4 is still no better than on the heavy cruiser. Personally, I think that this is actually part of the character because there are no Hellbores to react against to kind of force Omega Empires to, you know, follow the same route that the Klingons and Lyrans and other empires did in the Alpha Octant.
Right.
I mean, there are indulging weapons like the L'Oreal overloaded
flame.
They're not great.
But they don't target the weak shield like a Hellbore does.
True. So I kind of feel that for Omega, there might be something to trying to retain that essence and stuff. So where the player
and
does
I agree
think
with that.
About, yeah.
But for tournament standards, and considering that a Mazron tournament cruiser could run into a Hydran.
No, it can't. If you...
I did everything. people do play that.
Oh, I understand, Barry, but as I've pointed out multiple times, I personally don't think one you'll ever get the Alpha and the Omegas to a point where they can be played together. The systems were not ever designed to interact with one another. I understand that there's still some faults in the Omegas, and we've already referred to that earlier. But at the same time, I wouldn't want to try to, you know.
I know.
The other thing is that I'm kind of wary of the concept of messing around too much with the firing arcs because part of the reason why the Mistron is the way it is because it has really dodgy phaser arcs and stuff. I mean, it's kind of basically it feels like it's something that the Mesa player is supposed to have to try to suffer through, rather than I'd be very wary, because the thing is that like the wider arcs, it's one thing, but when the firing platform that they're firing out of is on a destroyer, because that does have wider arcs than the cruisers, but that basically might be more of an engineering thing. Like for example, like with the Shapeways miniatures, I mean, it's the primary hull is still underneath the floating platform, but I guess there's an argument to be made that, I guess, due to whatever warp balance, blah blah blah, techno babble, whatever, that basically the weapons mounted on the platform, they have more complications when they're on a cruiser or dreadnought than when they're on a destroyer. So,
I have no problem restricting the arcs back again.
Mm-hmm. But what I would say is that for warp power, now again, none of this hasn't necessarily been considered by DB, but in theory, what I would, like if there was a way to address the warp refits in historically, I would basically give the Mesrons the same kind of warp refits that are shown for the Kolagar and Trobriand in Capital 52. Basically, the left and right warp engines would go from 13 to 15. And so the command cruiser would have the warp pack as well as having two 15-box engines. So it would be just like a Federation CB.
Right.
And combined, so that would basically allow the correct historical number of APRs to be on the ship to basically bring it to the same total that you had with the tournament cruiser you were speaking of.
Right.
It would basically I
created that tournament cruiser back in 2010. And I guess I could have given it 32 warp, but I gave it 30 warp and 6 APRs. So slightly less powerful than what you're talking about, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, the Mesrons don't really have they don't really have any weapons that require warp power, so they wouldn't necessarily gain the way the Meds would or the Kolagar would. Although speaking of warp power, it always bugged me that the anti-proton weapons have anti-proton in the name but don't need warp power. But I kind of think that if the goal was to try to convince ADB to consider a set of, like, for some sort of like future, like, you know, playtest pack or something like that, whatever, I wonder if it might be worth considering both this and also a few of the other command cruisers that have been in recent issues, just as templates to work with. Even though, I mean, like, I'm not trying to say this in a way that I'm not trying to put down the work that you've put in on your own ship, whatever. But I just mean more in terms of trying to basically keep the ships as close to what might be considered historically. But still working.
I think everyone will agree for the most part that you want to keep those historical quirks with any ship there. Try to keep it the flavor of the actual Empire and the ship itself there as much as possible.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like, actually, because even the Alpha Octant, it's unfortunate, like with the ISC, for example, because it doesn't really have most of the character of, like, any of the historical ships. But the problem is that the ISC ships are just so powerful historically. So what's interesting is that in 2016, there was a revised version of Module C2, and it actually includes, I guess you could call it a middle years version of the heavy cruiser that has only two plasma torpedoes rather than three, or the two in the PPD. Because the idea is that when the ISC first built the heavy cruiser, they were comparing it to the Gorn heavy cruiser. So it didn't quite occur to them just yet to put a weapon in the central prong. So it has two G-torps, which become S-torps after Y-170, whatever. And then, so this also was handy because, say, if you're playing Module C6 and you've got the Paravians from the Lost Empire timelines, right. And in those timelines, the ISC are actually fighting the Paravians throughout the middle years. So there's no, like, isolation the way there is in the standard timeline. So in that timeline, those ships are actually fighting Romulan and Paravian ships, and are allied with the Gorns and so whatever. So people do actually have a chance to use that ship. So I almost wonder if, now of course it's far too late for this, but I almost wonder if that actually might make for an interesting, like a more friendly with other empires way to approach the ISC in a tournament thing. The only thing is that if you take away the PPD, you're maybe losing some of the flavor of the ISC. But
a few things that makes it unique.
It's like, why would anyone play the ISC if you don't have a PPD?
I agree.
Yeah.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, basically, you just have a Gorn with different arcs is what you got.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
But, by the way, now I don't want to veer off too far off, but just for future reference, so that you know what I'm referring to, the next page over in Captain's Log 54 is not out yet, 51, there's a Prober Command Cruiser, and the main difference with that is that it's got the wings of the Dreadnought rather than the standard heavy cruiser. But there's also a note as well where, historically, the first Prober Command Cruisers had the same heavy cruiser wings. So it's only in Y-165 that the bigger wings were installed. So, but yeah, basically it's just kind of like another way to kind of look at what was basically happening in universe. And now I know there's been a lot of issues talked about with the Prober in a tournament, but anyway. And then also in CL52, I mentioned that there's the Trobriand and Kolagar have command cruisers, and Kolagar one, it actually has a slightly enlarged aft bubble. And it has room for a couple of warp reactors that get added in, it's Y-155 as well.
So getting back to the Mazarin, I would agree with, get rid of two of the APRs, give it two center warp. So now it still has 40 power, but it's 32 warp instead. Go back to the command cruiser firing arcs for all the weapons, go back to eight racks on the tachyon missiles.
And add the flag bridge as well.
Yeah.
The flag bridge.
Okay. One thing that I'm not sure if you mentioned or not, the number of phasers is also different. You have.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. At least the one that I currently have in the client.
I have AP1s.
Yeah. You have 8 P1s. The command cruiser has 8 P1s. But here's the thing.
I have two extra P3s.
Yep.
That's right. Yeah.
And then, of course, we already mentioned the whole arcs thing.
You're right. I forgot about that. Yeah, because I had you had upgraded those PW3s to PW1s. Whereas I had taken the two PW1s in the front and doubled them. So I had two LS and two RS in the front.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, because it really, and this is for tournament purposes only, and I know, but without the extra phasers, that ship just could not. It doesn't work. It needed those extra P3s.
Well, perhaps one option could be to offer a variant of the tachyon missiles that has phasers on them.
Well, I'll get back to that in a second. So the other thing I did for the tournament cruiser is that you start the game with each of the tachyon guns, and you can put each tachyon gun individually. You decide whether that tachyon gun starts as arming complete and holding with 4 points of power in it, or empty. And that's an actual very interesting distinction. And the reason for that is that if it's holding 4 points of power, then it means that it needs 2 points of power in a tachyon gun to hold it. You can, of course, add more energy to it, but you have a tachyon gun with some power already in it. Now, empty is an interesting situation because the way the tachyon guns work is each turn of arming, you can put zero. You can put one. You have to put a minimum of 1 point of power in. Up to 7 points of power in, where over the two turns you can't have more than 8 points of power. But on the third term, the holding cost is what you pay. And let's say I put 5 points of power in for turn one arming. I can put 1 point of power in for turn two arming, but the hold cost would be three. So I get, it's much cheaper. You can set it up so that on turn two of arming, you're much cheaper than if you don't fire it and you have to hold it. That's the real Achilles heel of the Tachyon gun, is that if you don't fire it on turn two, you can hold it, but oh, it's pain. It's expensive to hold.
The question I have, though, is in a tournament setup, what is the default weapon status?
Weapon status three.
Well, three.
Yeah, so let me just double check and see, because for Fed Commander, the default is the equivalent of weapon status two. So I guess Tachyon guns, they could count as having a certain amount of power from the first turn of arming, if you wish. You don't have to. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to double check and see. For weapon status three, does a Tachyon gun can have a warhead strength of four or less at the start of the scenario, holding cost two. So I wonder if maybe, because the thing is, the whole thing about the weapon is how flexible it's supposed to be. Because, as you know, the range, being able to fine tune the range is so important. Perhaps less historically than in the tournament, but I wonder if it might be as well just to let players with Tachyon guns have the full flexibility that they have in a historical game, where they can go up to four if they want, but they can have, I guess, a minimum of two, I suppose, in order to have like a fully armed gun or whatever. So they can decide themselves if they want to feed reserve power, battery power, at the impulse of firing to boost it up or not. So if a player chooses to have all four weapons with the minimum amount of power in it and then ease their way in, and then if they get caught flat-footed, that's on them. But it's basically like, it's because with a weapon like this, it's basically providing that kind of you know. And also, this would apply for other empires that would use Tachyon guns, like the Zosmans, or like, for example, if the Volpa ever get done, because they, like, if you look at the Volpa blockade runner in Omega 2, it uses Ishwan type weapons and stuff. So if they ever got a tournament cruiser, then if they had Tachyon guns too, then that same flexibility would apply there.
So. Well, the thing about 4 points of power in a Tachyon gun is now you have a range of 16 and you can hold for two. So that means that on turn one, you can run into the center of the board at reasonable speed and fire your Tachyon guns at range 16, where they still have a 1-5 hit number. So you can say, I'm going to run in, fire them all, and then turn off and run out. Or the option of starting with them empty means you could do something like put 5 points of power in them, corner dive, and on turn two, just put 1 point of power. Now I have a 6 point Tachyon gun. Max range is only five, but I'm for all four of them, I've got 4 points of power to hold them all. That means I can move basically speed 31 with basically a fairly powerful weapon that at range. So yeah, I can move at speed 31 with a weapon that at range five, I'm doing 10 points of damage with a hit number of 1-5.
True.
Of course, if my opponent sees that, they can turn and run. I don't get range five, and now the following turn, it's a hold cost of three, which gets real expensive.
And also there's the question of whether you're running up a suicide shuttle or a wild weasel at the same time.
That's true, yeah.
Because the thing as well is that with the highest arming costs for the tachyon gun, the range is so low that you'd be probably thinking about a suicide shuttle. You may or may not be thinking about a suicide shuttle anyway, because you're going to be at, you know, like you have to get to range one for the full 8 points from a tachyon gun. But on the other hand, if you're planning to fire at a longer range, and then you could basically just keep the shuttle, you know, as a standard admin, and then, you know, do something else with the power instead. So,
yeah. Now, there was another type of tachyon missile that I created. I created a couple of extra tachyon missiles, and I submitted the rules for those tachyon missiles to
Patrick.
Steve Patrick. And he basically blew me off on those and said, nah. And because what I did was I went into the rules and of the tachyon missiles. And the rules for tachyon missiles said, these are the ultimate modular missiles. And I said, okay, I'll create a couple extra modules for it. And I created rules for them. I know, Paul. I know.
Yeah.
And basically, let me get Gary up to speed. I know we've barked over this bone many a time before, but let me get Gary up to speed on what I'm saying.
Go ahead.
And this is for tournament only, is that the tachyon missile has a huge weakness, and that is drones. Where one drone can pretty much, I know that theoretically a tachyon missile can survive getting hit by a drone, but even with 16 armor, a drone will knock it down to 4 points, and at that point, a drone and a P3 will take it out. So you've got these big, expensive missiles. You've got a ship that can fire one per turn, so its firing rate is low. And a drone-armed ship, say a Klingon ship, can use half its racks to counter the racks on the Mazaron and use the other rack to fire drones at the Mazaron. So the drones basically are very, very effective at neutralizing tachyon missiles. And you don't and tachyon missiles really don't do much damage. In fact, a large drone does more damage than a tachyon missile. So you can get drones that are faster than tachyon missiles. Of course, you don't have many of them. So what I did was I created some extra modules to put on tachyon missiles that would give them some defense against drones. So I think I created one module that was basically a point defense module. And it had, I think, two or three P3s on it. But those P3s could only be used against size class 7, basically missiles and plasmas, drones, plasmas, other tachyon missiles. But those phasers were basically point defense phasers. And I think I said that module took up two spaces. And it was just there. So, yeah, if you fired a, and I figured it out that if you fired a drone at the tachyon missile, I think I put two phaser threes on it. So if you fired a drone at a tachyon missile, the tachyon missile could take that drone out, but a second drone is probably going to get through.
Well, for what it's worth, like when I tried to sit down and figure out what the pre-cooked missiles would be in Venture Commander, I went into the rules and tried to basically look at, because For anyone who hasn't seen it, the Tachyon Missile Rules for Customization, they specify which year certain advancements, whether it's propulsion or warhead or phasers, AKG, that sort of thing. And so the idea was that basically, like, if you were fighting a battle against the Andromedans in Y196 or whatever, then the missiles that you have available are a lot better than the ones you have if you're fighting in, say, Y150. So I tried to basically accompany that. Now, that's not an issue with the tournament, because I guess you could just assume a date, like maybe Y175 or whatever it is. But I wonder if maybe a different way to do to approach this would be to build pre-cooked warheads that are based on the rules. Because, I mean, you can, from Y175, you can put additional phaser 3s on a missile, but and they are able to hit anything, but the each phaser W3 or phaser 3, whatever it is, because I guess if the Belasco are using it, they don't have to use a wide-angle phaser on the Tachyon missile. You can then, or for that matter, if the Federal Republic are using it, they can put like an Alpha Octant phaser 3 on there. You can basically, you have to pay 2 size points for each of those. So, and then of course later in the timeline from Y212, you can use phaser W1 or phaser 1, whatever. But actually, it's only the Mitrons can do this though. But that's way beyond the timeline we're talking about. So, I kind of think that. I mean, I get what you're. I mean, I can definitely see a way to kind of, make things interesting. But I guess Paul would probably note that you don't really have to worry too much about the drones in the historical setting. I mean, there are a couple of cases, like there's a bunch of Klingon ships that showed up with Krakenor in Y171, and supposedly they did fight the Volpa, but they used the blast of their drones, and then also. In the Y210s, the Sakharov, the advanced galactic survey cruiser, if you do any scenarios with that ship, it'll have its Type 7 X drones or whatever. Well, not in FC, because in FC, it's looking like drones will be just the same as Type 1s, but they'll be speed 32 with standard. So kind of cutting back a bit on that. But anyway, so what I would kind of think is one interesting thing to do would be to decide maybe you'll have one warhead, which is all about propulsion. So it basically goes speed 32, but maybe the warhead's not that much higher. Or you can have one that's all about the armor. So it's kind of like a slug drone, or what the Lesser Magellanic Cloud would call a kinetic slug missile for mass drivers. And then you could have one that's about the phaser, I guess that's Swordfish, is it? For Alpha Octant? You could do one where you're building a missile up to the standards that you can get away. I'd say make it Y180, because Omega's a little bit more flexible than Alpha in terms of, like, it doesn't have the strict from Y175. Thou shalt have all these extra things immediately. That doesn't really happen in Omega, of course. But, yeah, so you basically do the same sort of thing where you pre-cook based on the rules as they are. And then what you could even do is you could do there's a under OFD 1.2722, you can actually do a tame boar type 3 option where you've got like it's kind of like ATG but like a little bit different and stuff, whatever. So actually that would be useful if you had those Osmonds using their stealth field, because when you're on the stealth field you have to use passive fire control, which doesn't exist in tournament, but you could probably figure out a workaround. But if you are stealth, you could then use the tame boar to launch your Tachyon missiles at a certain range, and then they get to a certain distance, they can, try to travel the rest of the distance to the target ship. So, and then you could even, so there's basically, and even like, say, for example, if you're fighting a Belasco, maybe you could work up a negative tractor missile option. And the handy thing is that if you've only got 2 Type A missile racks, you basically say to the player, well, you've got all these tricks, but which one are you gonna use? I mean, like, sooner or later, the tricks are gonna run out. But I mean, it gives a little bit of character to those Tachyon missile empires, if they so wish. But it sounds like it would do it in a way that,
Well, that's essentially what I was saying, was that I had created several pre-built ones, but I was looking at this and saying that from a tournament point of view, if you're facing somebody who has no drones, in the Type 1 and the Type 2 I created. The Type 1 is basically, it's got an explosion of 16, but an armor of 12. So it's hard to stop with phasers, not too hard to stop with phasers. And remember that you can fire heavy weapons at a tachyon missile with no penalty. It has all of them have 1 point of anti-tractor. So a 2 point tractor can stop it. Because I figured that one tachyon missile should be equivalent to two drones, is what I'm trying to go for.
Mm-hmm. Simply because the other thing I can mention as well is that sooner or later there might be a Carnivon tournament cruiser. And if so, mm-hmm. they'd probably have to use the death bolt rules that are in Module C6.
Right.
But there was actually a big argument, I remember, on the BBS when the Module C6 was being developed as to, you know, what should be done to death bolts to make them competitive against the Kzintis using their crazy drones or whatever like that. But they didn't get an awful lot. I mean, like, there's ways that you can use your deck crews to, like, deck crew actions, rather, to speed up the launch rate of your death bolts and stuff, whatever. But,
right, which is some,
I mean,
weird
they still
thing
have kind
bolts.
Of like, yeah. So I kind of
I don't
like
remember what the death bolts had.
Yeah, I mean, they're I think they come with like a 35, but they've got a quite a big warhead, or whatever, relative to a drone. But they've got like they're even more. I guess they're not quite as customizable as the tachyon missile. And interestingly enough, you can't deploy historically anyway. You can't deploy a death bolt from a fighter or a PF, whereas you can deploy tachyon missiles from fighters or PFs.
Right.
But,
correct.
Yeah, actually, the Carnivons would be an interesting topic.
Agreed.
I guess if we ever...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
In the future, yeah. But anyway, I guess what I was trying to say is that, I mean, I agree. I mean, it's... Even if you're only using the historical module options, you might not get a seeking weapon that... is as useful in a tournament as a drone, but I kind of think that's part of the point. I mean, like, there's no empire that's going to basically, like, there's no equivalent of the Kzintis in the setting, in the sense that there's no empire that relies exclusively on its drone-like seeking weapons. I mean, there's plenty of plasma-like seeking weapons in Omega, like the Trobriand, and depending on how you do the Trobriand, you can do them too, although the Trobriand are probably better if they're mixing in the implosion bolts as well. But even the Mistrons, they're not really intended to lean so heavily on their missiles and stuff. So I kind of think that in a tournament view, it might not be a deal breaker if they only get a certain amount of use from the missiles, but that they really have to focus on their tachyon gun usage in terms of being able to actually carry it.
Well, the tachyon guns are your big weapon. And as I said, the missiles, I consider them to be along the lines of a Klingon or a Windblack Shark or something along those lines, where the tachyon missiles, the drone weapons are a little extra firepower, but they're not your main firepower. But, you know, they just add a little bit to you.
Well,
that's actually another reason
why I'd
consider
Seeking weapons in general are mainly designed not as a weapon that's going to hit you, but a weapon that if you ignore is going to hurt you, and it's more of mobile terrain, as you know. I pointed out.
Well, the Type 2 tachyon missile I had was only an explosion of 8. So you can run through them without getting too badly hurt.
Mm-hmm.
They're only going to do 8 points of damage to you. Of course, the Type 2 has 16 armor, so it's like, well, that thing is really difficult to take out. And I just might as well just run right through it. I'll take my 8 points of damage, which is a totally different philosophy than you would take with a drone.
Right.
Okay. But if you only have, say, I agree with Gary. Let's go to ARACs. So you only have 6 of them. that's 48 points of damage total from your missile weapons. That's it. Then your racks are empty. You know, so that's, you know, the type ones, they do 16 points of damage. So that's double that. But you can kill them. They only have 12 points of armor. But the problem is, so that's a little extra. Basically, it's a grind factor that you can grind down your opponent. The problem is that's, again, if you're facing a Fed or a direct fire weapon or a plasma armed ship, those two types are perfect. But if you're facing anybody with drones, they completely negate that for very little cost. So it's a rock, scissors, paper.
Well, the other thing to bring up is that if we go back to the Carnivons for a second, they don't use disruptor bolts. They use disruptor cannons. Because I actually think they're the most Mesaron-like of the Alpha Octant Empires, even though they don't exist.
sadly, I'm not familiar with the Carnivons.
Yeah. So basically, a disruptor cannon is a two-turn arming weapon. And each standard shot is almost about as roughly about as powerful as an overload shot for a disruptor bolt. But the disruptor cannon can itself overload. I think it's an extra 50% on top, but you have to use warp power to do the overload. And because the Carnivons have those heel nippers and stuff, because there's no real equivalent of a heel nipper,
right,
unless you count the Belosco tractor tricks and stuff. So I guess for the Carnivon, it's even more so than the Mesaron that they're leaning on their direct fire weapons and stuff, because they've got that heel nipper trick and stuff where they can really mess things up for their opponent if the opponent has L&R warp engines, because like if you're flying the Gorn ship, you can't force them to turn, but you can still damage the warp engines using the heel nippers. So, but yeah, basically, the dynamic in this situation might not be necessarily all that different if you're fighting an empire that uses disruptor bolts and drones, because I mean, both the Mesaron and Carnivon, they're not necessarily fighting every turn unless you decide to split your tachyon gun or disruptor cannon fire. Whether you want to do that is another story, but you're basically thinking in terms where you're basically planning every second turn, what range do you want to be with your heavy weapons, and how do you want your seeking weapons to support that or not. So
right,
yeah, but yeah, I mean,
and that's why I said, you know, if with a phaser defense module, it would actually make for a less powerful missile. So you're giving that up. So it might have armor of 8 and explosion of 8. So it's easier to phaser down. It doesn't do much damage, but at least it has some drone defense to it. And I thought that was kind of reasonable. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, maybe try to build the same missile, but use the historical modules where you can basically, like, you know, it's not as efficient. Like, you have to use up 2 size points per phaser 3, but at least then it would basically have it. It would fit the rule. It would fit the rules as, you know, they exist for
I did consider that, but think about this. The problem is that you have to pick the targets before you launch the missile. And that's the problem, is that if you launch a missile and somebody launches a drone against it, those phasers can't be targeted on that drone. That's the problem.
Is that the same that other empires have with swordfish drones?
Yes. You have to pick the target. And I don't think the swordfish can be used to defend the drone.
Right, it can't defend, have its self-defend, you know, defend itself, basically.
Right,
so what
right.
you have to
That's
do
why.
Is, you'd have to basically wait for the other guy to launch drones, and then launch your TM, and then wait for the myopic zone to clear, and then wait for the miss the drone if it's still in flight to get close enough to for the missiles phasers to shoot at.
And there's a very easy counter to that. There's a very easy counter to that. You basically hold one drone rack in reserve, and you wait till you launch the other drone rack early in the turn, and at the end of the turn, impulse 28, you launch the second drone rack.
And
because you know that there's a myopic period of four impulses, by the time you can fire the tachyon missile and get through the myopic zone, the other side of the rack has cycled. So you always have, you can still fire both drone racks every turn, but you always have one ready to fire before the tachyon missile can hit you.
Now, okay, I'm just going to bring this one last time and I'll let it go.
Okay, I know.
Yeah, did you know what I'm going to say, Barry? There are no drone racks in the Omega. Really?
I know.
So it's you're using, you are giving an example that if you stick to the historical empires that faced each other, or at least had a chance to face to each other.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about that, the whole idea of drones, because the drones were built for the Alpha Octet, not the Omega. The Omega didn't, you know, lot less seeking weapons.
I know.
You know, the missiles that were there were more powerful, but, you know, they didn't have as many.
You know, well, so, I know that's so, exactly.
So giving an example which uses drones, in my mind, is kind of pointless. The only reason that would even come into play is if you try to integrate the two, and I don't think it's possible to integrate the two.
Well, in fairness, I mean, if you're talking about the Lesser Magellanic Cloud, or Trianglum for that matter, they don't have drones either. So it's a question of whether or not you'd have to put like a little kind of a exclamation point or an asterisk on the SSD for the tournament ship and say, oh, by the way, if you're up against a Kazinti tournament cruiser, then too bad. But so I don't know. I mean, like, I suppose what you could do is you could basically do it so that if you're fighting against a Kazinti ship or like a Black Shark, whatever like that, then your TA racks are now TC racks, so you can fire both per turn. So, you know, I mean, because TC racks do exist historically, and some of the empires, I guess, I mean, technically, you know, you could do up a Zosman cruiser that had those, but then you'd have to give up your heavy weapon firing. But in this instance, I mean, wasn't there some sort of rule for the Andromedan where the TRHs, the TR beams count as heavy TRs if you're fighting a civil war or something like that?
Yeah,
yes, they do.
Yes, actually, I need to discuss that with Mr. Petrick. Honestly.
Yeah.
Because having a drumming ship with only two TRLs to fight against people, I got my butt beat by Klingon. I mean, I didn't even have a chance. I didn't even get. I got 8 points of damage on his shields. That's all I got. Before he killed me. What's wrong with this picture?
Yeah, I know.
One of the reasons why that happened was because of the Klingon was so flexible because it has those disruptors. What did he do the first turn? He let me come in and hit his shield. And what happened on that shield? The shield had like 16 points of reinforcement on it. Because he he put power reinforcement, and there was a time where actually I got him to range 3, and I decided not to fire. You know why I decided not to fire? Because he was going speed 0, and I figured if I fired a single blast, it would done absolutely totally nothing, no damage to him whatsoever. So it's pointless to even fire a weapon at him. You know, and unfortunately, at that point, also I had this all his drones got this, you know, massive drones, six drones coming in at me. So, you know, at the same time, I can't really.
And you only have six P2s. That's not going to stop them.
Yeah. Yeah. I could have fired four P2s and two TRLs at range three. And I might have gotten a couple dings off his shield, but that's about it. With two TRLs, I need to get two good hits on the same shield just to get internals. What's wrong with this picture?
Did you tell me before that a tournament crate doesn't have a displacement device, or that it does and it's you can't offensively displace an enemy ship?
I can't offensively
displace. You can only use it on yourself.
And only can go to six hexes.
Yeah, with that.
I can't go 12.
Yeah, because what I think is, I think you should be able to use it offensively, because then you could say to an Empire using speaking weapons, all right, well, you want to build up six drones? Well, oh, there goes your tracking.
No, Gary, that's one thing you're wrong.
Yeah.
It wouldn't change that at all, because of it for the things that are targeted on you by that ship, they don't lose tracking.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
That was one of the reasons why it's like, okay, why can't I displace my opponent? It's not like they're going to lose tracking on their drones. They don't, because of the rules.
That made no sense why they limited the Andromedans. The Andromedans have been screwed over with the tournament rules. There's no doubt about it.
I understand the
and
six,
every time
six
you
versus
try
12,
to fix but... that, Paul, that you, Petrick is blocking you.
Yeah, well, he.
I understand your frustration there.
Right. Oh, and well, I understand Petrick's issues because of he got bitten. He did something silly and gave the Saltorian two additional phaser ones because everyone says, oh, it needs more weapons, you know, because it's really, you know, it's chinky, you know. And what happened? It totally it killed, you know. It, you know, had the two web breakers, but it had 10 phaser ones and four particle cannons. Can you say this killer?
Right.
I remember the reason I remember
much.
That is because what happened? I was playing by email tournament, and guess what? I got to face. I got to face in the original, you know, tier heavy, two tier heavies, six phaser twos, six batteries, the whole nine yards. Andromedan versus a Saltorian with 10 phaser ones. And I died really quick. And of course, And of course, really quickly, Steve Petrick reversed himself. You know, and unfortunately, the damage was done for when it comes to the tournament I was playing in. It's like, thanks, a little late. You know, because this was played by email. So, which case, the We went with whether it was the current sanctioned ship at that time. And if the sanctioned ship changed between round one and round two, you changed your ships.
Remember that one year where they put out a new Wynn AUX cruiser that was really, really powerful? And it, like, wiped the tournament?
Oh, no. Okay, I know what you're talking about. Not quite.
Yeah.
Not new.
Yeah, and then there was a Klingon that did actually win, and they called him, and I think he named his ship the Windslayer.
That wouldn't surprise me, but yeah, I know what you're talking about. That's basically it was before they limited the number of phaser G's you actually could mount on a Wynn from to only one.
Right.
You could mount two phaser G's. It just killed, you know.
Yeah.
But that, you know, so yeah, all yeah, the Bandy. I can't say twins because it was father and son.
Well, here's a thought then. What if instead of having a standard Andro, like a single ship? You could basically say, because like your average tournament cruiser is about 150 points BPV on average, right?
About that.
That's the goal, give or take.
Mm, give or take, yeah. it's adjusted because of the fishbowl.
So what if you basically have a setup where, like a special setup, where two standard tournament cruisers face a conquistador and a satellite ship?
That would be interesting, but that wouldn't be tournament style. It wouldn't be the duel.
Yeah, tournament is one ship versus one ship.
Yeah, duel. And the crate, for the most part, it was designed after the conquistador. It just got trimmed down a little bit when it comes to number of hull boxes and things like that. Because if you actually look at the crate actually still has a hanger. Which reminds me, I have to fix that in the SSDs. Because currently the hanger is actually a hittable box. And it's not. Per se.
Right.
At least for a tournament.
The crate is a ship that they put it in the tournament, and nobody's ever, it's always considered, oh, that's the weaker ship. I know you've played it a number of times, Paul, but how often have you won a tournament?
Since they nerfed it? Never.
Yeah. That's what I thought. So that's telling me that it's obviously too weak.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I have to talk to Patrick. I've meant to send out an email a couple of weeks ago, and I still have not done it. And I'm going to see if I can convince him to, at the very, very least, leave the batteries alone. Yeah, the three batteries, which sucks, but I understand defensively that kind of makes it harder for, you know, it limits what the Andromeda can do, and I kind of agree with that. But I think it needs either additional TRL or convert the two TRLs to TRHs. Actually, what I'd really like to have four TRLs, but that's me. TRLs would be great because of then you still have around the same amount of damage, a little weaker, tiny bit weaker than two TRHs, but you also have better internals. So,
well, yeah,
aren't there mothership variants that do trade in their TRHs for more TRLs so they can do work against fighters and gunboats?
Yeah, usually it's some of them is what they would trade in their TRHs to TRLs.
I guess
yes.
That could be an option where, I guess, if the Andro is expected to be in a seeking weapon heavy environment and stuff or something. But I think we're way off track here. But
understood.
I was going to say,
we chase our rabbits.
Do you have
modules C6?
Yeah, I have modules C6.
Do you think that? I'll get Barry as well. Would it be worth having a look at the Carnivons in a future episode, or do you guys already have something planned for the next few episodes?
We don't have anything planned for next week.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about the Paravians or the Carnivons.
I don't have module C6.
I can send you the PDF because I bought the online edition. Also, I have an actual physical copy too. So I can kind of.
Well, there is a sample PDF that has on the Warehouse 23 that has the war cruisers for both empires and stuff. That just gives like a flavor of it. Mm-hmm. And also, for anyone who's into FC, there is an FC play. It's not a preview PDF, they call it, which has three Carnivon ship cards and three Paravian ship cards. So those might be worth checking out for anybody who's interested in stuff.
I have P6, but not C6.
Yes. It's module C6. Yeah, P6 is the playtest stuff.
The Galactic Smorgasbord.
Yeah. I like that. I like the Galactic Smorgasbord. It was, and also I like the.
What is in it?
The P6 or C6?
It's got Paravians. It's got Vooder. Oh, it's got Mega Phasers. Hispalians, the Flivver, the Deltons, the Phoenians.
Flivver. That's not C6. That's C4.
Oh, Module X2, second generation ships. What the heck?
Well, that stuff has been decanonized, I guess you could say.
Yes.
Because whatever like the real Module X2 is going to look like, it won't look anything like that.
Yeah, I got that one. That was one of those ones that basically it was a quick X2 module, which they went, this does not work.
Yeah, I bought Module X2.
Oh, me too.
So they're just describing it. There's no SSDs or rules.
Right.
Yeah. But, I do not have C6.
Yeah, I can kind of lend you my copy of C6.
Now, I will tell you that module, the LMC tournament cruisers, they just work. In fact, Ken Burnside created several LMC tournament cruisers, and I basically copied them direct into Starfleet Battles Online, and we tested them out, and they just worked perfectly. No modifications required. It was awesome.
I do remember we were talking about the Jimokian new light cruiser from, I think, the CL-48 or something like that. Because I don't think have a pre-existing one. Yeah. Oh, one other thing as well is, did you guys ever talk about the Triangulum Galaxy stuff?
No, we did not talk about Triangulum.
Yeah, because...
I do have that module.
Yeah, so what it's worth, there's three of the Empires are in that module, yes. And then there's the fourth Empire, Playtest Empire, that are in Captain's Log 23. They're called the Imperium. So the Helgardians, the Arachnids, and the Malarans are in... one of the things that's interesting is that the Malarans, I think they have the ram torpedo. It's actually sort of like the way you have the with the Sigvirions, where I think the ram torpedo, I don't think it's the warhead. I think it's the speed of the torpedo. It actually speeds up after it's launched and then slows down again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's another one of those kind of weird, it's really meant to be targeted at planets and bases sort of thing and stuff. And you can't turn with them either. They can only sideslip.
Yeah, but at the same time, speed doesn't really matter that much to me. The important thing is how much damage. Because
because the speed damage is a multiplier of the speed.
Oh.
Like it's kind of weird. Yeah, it's kind of weird like that, because it's like the Helgardians, they've got these little kind of like rotating shields, like weak versions of what the Juggernaut has.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Arachnids, they can assimilate other empires, not as well as the Sigs can, but you wouldn't really see that in a tactical level, whatever. But their plasmas actually got, because there's another. I don't know if you remember a while back, I mentioned that there's a 2011, sorry, Errath file for Module C5, which modifies some of the rules there. There is a similar file from 2011 for the Triangulum Galaxy material, right. So that might be worth looking at as well. And that significantly nerfed plasma weapons that the Arachnids have. So that might be a problem there. But the Imperium...
Getting back to Andromedans, though. We should probably take one from the C3A module.
Oh, man.
Give the Andromedans their P1s.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
Hey, well, they need them. Tell me I'm wrong.
Lord, Barry, if the Andromedans had phaser ones, they would have taken over the galaxy. You know?
Well, I'm talking about for the tournament.
Yeah, I know. But,
because it only has 16 ones.
Right.
I mean,
the thing but that really does change things drastically if you change the phaser twos to phaser ones, mainly because of the amount of damage that the phaser ones can do versus phaser twos, especially in the case when you're not fighting anything with a large number of seeking weapons, or you're fighting plasma, because plasma would kill plasma. I mean, freaking kill it. Is what it would do. Any plasma race, it would kill totally, because it could outrun the plasma versus, you know, the drones. Drones keep going, you know, for three turns they keep going.
Yeah.
You know, so you're constantly running them out, and it's not costing the thrower any energy whatsoever. While plasma, those ships, they have to slow down because they have to recharge their weapons.
Yeah.
You know.
Although plasmas are very efficient. It's the most efficient heavy weapon out there.
Oh, understood. Of course, my opponent, David, I already told you, basically the main reason I won that one is because he completely whiffed an Alpha at range, I think it was range 6. Yeah, range 6. He bolted all 4 plasmas and missed with all 4 plasma.
Oops.
Yeah, that kind of did not help things at all for him, so... Anyway, okay, well, it's getting late. We need to wrap it up here. We'll see.
Yes, we do.
We'll see if we can do Cardavans next week. I'll make sure that you get a copy of the rules, Barry. Just don't give them out. Okay. Don't give them to anybody else.
I won't.
Okay. So, with that, Barry, Gary, you both have a good night.
Good night.
And team, good night, everyone. Bye.
So, had nice discussion about the Mezrons again. As pointed out, you know, I still disagree with Barry when it comes to the whole drone thing. It's like there's no drones in Omega, so you know it is what it is. And of course, we chased down the Andromedans, and I agree. Thanks for pointing that out, because I need to really get myself in gear and actually talk to Mr. Petrick about that, because of at the very least give it another tier off, give it at least a fighting freaking chance, you know. I like to actually have an extra battery too, but I'm gonna be reasonable, you know, because as Paul Scott himself pointed out, it's not the offensive weapon, it's not the power which was always been the problem with the Andromedans. It's the ability to basically to clear the panels and have that large defensive ability again very quickly versus any other empire, any other ship out there. And that's the cause. And that's why getting it down to 3 batteries is 3 batteries is, you want to talk about the toughest opponent with 3 batteries is the Hydran. You know, it's nuts. In fact, you know, we talked about an option way back when, which is like 2 batteries, but they get an energy module. And the one thing I've always liked about the idea of adding an energy module to the Andromedan crate has been that you could actually tweak it relatively easily. In a tournament, you know, you could tweak it to be 5 versus 10 versus 15 or whatever. And it's like at the first go around, it gives the Andromeda one shot to take the first hit and come back. But the second time, it ain't going to be able to shake it off hardly at all. And also gives it, you know, a kind of a quote unquote defensive tertiary weapon, you know, secondary weapon. So that you have, there's a target for something other than the ship itself. But that's another podcast. And with that, I bid you a good night.